Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 542. We've added a second show to San Diego Comic-Con, and it's going to be good. I mean, they're both going to be good, but I feel like the shows will be equally good, so you don't have to worry about, like, which one do I go to? I believe they will be different guests, so if you wanted to go to both, you could have two different experiences. Not like even if they were the same guests, we're not going to say the same things verbatim. But there'll be two unique experiences. And then there's a 7:30 show, July 26th, that Saturday of San Diego Comic-Con. And we will be there. I'd like to thank for sponsoring. You probably want a URL, but I don't have it. Still don't have the URL. I don't know. It's fucking Google it, people. Or Bing it, or Web Crawler, or Lycos, or whatever you want to use. I don't know. But I'd like to thank Audible.com for sponsoring this episode of the Nerds Podcast. Audible is a leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the internet. If you've listened to an audiobook, you probably got it at audible.com. There's a library of over 150,000 titles. All right? And so here's what you're going to do. You're going to get a free audiobook and a 30-day trial today by signing up at audiblepodcast.com/nerdist. All right? That's going to give you, again, free audiobook, 30-day trial. Some suggestions might be Shrinkage by Brian Bishop, narrated by Brian Bishop, who was just in the Nerdist podcast recently, or The Todd Glass Situation by Todd Glass, strangely not narrated by Todd Glass. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/nerdist. This episode is Nick Thune, our old friend, our old comedian friend Nick Thune, promoting his newest special Folk Hero, which is available on Netflix and now available on vinyl. Order the vinyl on his site, nickthune.com, N-I-C-K-T-H-U-N-E. M-O-U-S-E. No, it's just the NICKTHNUE.com. Nerds Podcast number 542.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Recording. That's it. We started.
Wow.
How's it feel?
Just like that. You know, you wonder how it starts.
I don't think anyone really wonders.
Not with a bang.
No, I think there's a blog of people always wanting to know, how do they start it? Does Chris just say we're recording? Or
there actually could be a Tumblr devoted to that.
Yeah. Is this it?
Fuck yeah,
is
they started it.
That's good.
Yeah,
that Tumblr?
Someone should really go back to all the episodes and just like every time that happens and just make a super cut.
It's oh, have we started?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, if we started Tumblr.
Yeah.
What's the weirdest Tumblr site you've ever seen that's like a legit?
Oh. Gifilis Cage.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's all GIFs of Nicolas Cage freaking out in different movies. Gifilis Cage.
I didn't like the doctor that did like our sonogram test for the baby, and so I started Googling him. And there was a page, I'm not going to say his name, but it was his full name, first, last name, killedmyson.tumblr.com.
Oh my
what?
God.
And it was this, and I like kept searching this guy's site, and there was like links to it on New York Times articles about miscarriages and blah blah blah. And it was the darkest, like this guy started, it was like obviously it turned into a malpractice suit of some kind, and the hospital got the site turned down. But I just thought how great that he used a Tumblr.
Yeah.
Like a Tumblr site.
It's an easy site to do.
Yeah. And how many notes did that?
What was that Tumblrity? What was the Tumblrity of that site?
Do they still do Tumblrity?
No, that was short lived. Way into it though.
Do they still do? Do they still do pokes on Facebook and werewolves and?
I don't know.
Remember when you first joined Facebook? It was like so and so just poked you, so and so just bit you. Now you're a werewolf.
Yeah, I never
go bite someone else.
I think that they're doing all that stuff, but I think people have chilled out on it a little bit.
Yeah, well, there's other like games. I don't know if I can have any clue. I don't really go on it. I like that Facebook started the Messenger service, so you can just use it as like an email. You don't have to go to the actual site and see what other fucking dumb shit people are posting.
But you can get emails to it?
Like it's as if it's its own email service.
Oh.
So anyone who sends you a message on Facebook, you can have a separate app that you have that's just for those messages.
Interesting. Yeah. So now I have to answer those messages.
Or you just don't get the app if you don't want to.
I always play that. I don't check Facebook that often. Sorry I missed your stand-up show 2 months ago.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
Were you responding to yourself? I'm sorry I missed my show 2 months ago.
Just wasn't there. Wasn't aware.
Are you touring at all right now?
You know, I'm doing like Denver next month, but I'm not on a huge tour.
Okay.
because I'm a dad.
Yeah.
I try to do 2 weeks a month, though. I'm trying to put like a little Northwest thing together or something.
You mean Kanye's baby?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Me and Northwest, just out on the road, no supervision. Mm-hmm. Whatever happens, happens.
That would actually be a pretty great.
Yeah, you're good.
That would be a pretty great way to do a tour. Just because you know, I mean, let's just say hypothetically you could rent that baby. Whatever you would pay for that baby would be worth it because like that baby would be the draw.
Yeah, people come just to see.
Huge draw.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not that you're not a draw, but they're a but that baby is a bigger draw than
it's
all of us combined.
It's almost like saying, hey, I'm going to take the original R2-D2 on tour.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just going to be on display.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it.
I might see an R2-D2.
That's, I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
I want to see an R2-D2.
Think I'm making the noise? Think I'm making the noise?
Bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop, bloop.
Oh,
bleep,
sorry. We can't do the noises. Just yeah, the sorry, R2-D2. Yeah,
just, yeah. Imagine, though.
I wonder. I bet they would rent out Northwest. Just wonder what the fee would be.
Well, in a way, when they release pictures to the press, it's kind of like renting out the baby in a weird sort of way.
No, it's the term is whoring.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm actually whoring out a car right now.
You sure are. Yeah, it's this guy's a shiller now too.
What'd you do?
Well, I'm renting when I'm on the road. I whore out cars. Where, you rent a car. Whoring out an apartment currently with my wife.
That's true. You're right.
Did you? When I'm on the road, I like to whore out a RAV4, and I whore extra for the nav.
Yeah,
so that
yeah.
I get the navigation, the never lost navigation.
Sometimes system. I whore out a woman. Wait
a second.
No, no, sorry. I rent out a woman.
Wait, what?
Wait, I have sex with strangers.
Okay. Now we get down to the bottom of it.
Right now, I'm on a whore-to-own program for a bunch of furniture.
Nice.
I always whore it with an option to own it, but I never really pick up that option.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, why, the milk's for free.
Yeah. No, you're talking about that cow that I've been whoring out for.
You've
a while.
Been whoring out that cow, yeah.
I love the Hortles, that band that broke off from Weezer. Okay, that's a
we brought it.
Rentals,
I got it.
And then this Matt, he did that
with their hit song "Acquaintances of Pee."
That's right.
Yeah,
because Rick Ocasek produced the album.
Yes. Yeah.
And they were talking about Paulina Porizkova. That is such weird trivia that I know.
Rick Ocasek produced the album?
He produced the Rentals album, as far as I know.
Yeah, because he produced the first and third Weezer albums. And he's about to do the next one.
From the Cars?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did the Blue album, Green album. He's about to do their next one.
Did he produce any of the Cars albums?
I believe so. Here, Kyle, when you know something, chime in so we don't sound like idiots.
Yes, he did produce a couple of Cars.
The Cars? The Cars?
Yeah.
That album?
I don't know if he did that one. I think he did them later on. It's that Jimmy Page kind of thing where he learned how to do it and then just did it.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotta remember how fucking cool he was.
Still pretty cool.
Well, I mean, just in terms of the, when the Cars were out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just one of those bands where you're like, man, I don't even know if I love the music, but I just fucking love those guys. Yeah, but I did. I mean, like, I liked a lot of the Cars music, but
some great stuff that they did. I mean, just great pop kind of.
Yeah, it was almost like they broke down a science of how to make a pop tune.
Yeah.
And then they just did
nailed it.
Yeah.
I love that song All Mixed Up, which isn't one of their more popular ones, but I found, when you find a song through a backwards like channel of you hear somebody cover it, like Mark Kozelik, is that his name?
Kozelik.
He did like this covers album and he did that Cars song. And then you think that that's his song. I didn't even know it was a covers album. And someone's like, oh yeah, the Cars version is great. And I'm like, what do you mean? The original? Oh.
Now I always heard it was Mark Kozelik, but I don't know.
Kozelik?
Is it?
That sounds.
Sun Kills
Mark.
Moon, right?
That yeah, he was Sun Kill Moon. Sun Kill Moon, because
he did the Modest Mouse.
He did the Modest Mouse.
Yeah, Tiny Cities Made of Ash.
His fucking cover.
AC/DC, the whole AC/DC cover album he's got is so good.
Did he do an AC/DC?
It's like 10 AC/DC songs.
I absolutely love his cover of Trucker's Atlas. Is so good.
Yeah, yeah. His Dramamine is his cover of Dramamine by Modest Mouse.
I heard he's always on Dramamine.
Probably.
No, he just whores it.
Hey, it's Lance.
Did you hear the last Sun Kill Moon record?
No. Yeah, the newest one.
It's the guy somehow has been able to make sadder songs.
Really?
They're even sadder. There's just the song about his cousin like dying in a freak explosion.
What?
It's like a fucking 10-minute long song.
Now the one,
and it doesn't get any better. It's a real sad song.
The one that I heard was the song about...
And it's real?
Yeah, it's all real.
How he's friends... Who was he hanging out with? He was friends with... the song was all about... Oh, look it up. It had something to do with...
Was it on the last album?
It's
the
most recently because I heard it on Sirius.
Oh, okay, yeah. That last album, though.
Oh, he's talking about... he's talking about hanging out with Ben Gibbard.
Oh,
I think
really?
the song's called My Friend Ben.
Oh, jeez.
And it's just this whole tale about... It's just this weird story about, like, how he goes, and then he's playing a show, and then he's hanging out with Ben, and...
Yeah, it's really... He, like, kind of just step by step, there's always just that... He seemed like... He had a line in a song from that last album where it's just like, I was in a band in the 90s. Yeah, we were pretty pretty cool.
Red House Painters?
Yeah, he was in Red House Painters. But like the line was like, we had a lot of female fans and fuck, they were all were hot. And now I just signed posters for guys in tennis shoes.
I like that lyric.
Yeah.
That was kind of the single off this new album, right?
Oh, well, that was Among the Leaves. So that was a single off the...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Sunshine in Chicago or something like that was the song. But it's like, it's real like a guy that had his moment and now he's just...
Aware of the moment
and realizes that like it's just kind of dad's coming to see him.
But what about like when...
Ben's my friend.
What about when he was in Almost Famous?
What was he in Almost Famous?
He was one of the band members in Stillwater.
Really?
And where he really shines is when they're singing Tiny Dancer, when they're pulling away from that drug kind of experience in the morning. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And he, like, that's where you're like, oh, that's the one guy that can sing in this whole group.
Oh, funny. That's really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Was he the guy that also was like, I don't know, man, I just want to get a burrito or something?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Did you, were you in bands?
I was in two bands. I was in a cover band called No Hablos, where we did all like Ricky Martin, like Latin, these like kind of like that Latin America kind of explosion. We only did those songs. Mm-hmm. And then
as many forms as possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, very serious kind of taking ourselves very seriously. And that's when I first did stand up, actually, was an intermission of that band's show. And then I was just in another horrible cover band. You know, I never actually got into an original band, which was frustrating.
But yeah, you've made songs.
I have made songs.
You've made
a
ton of songs now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, me and Kate Micucci kind of had a band for a little bit, and then Garfunkel and Oates really stole her away.
She should be like Charlie Nee and start 80 bands in a year.
I know.
Ricky Lindholm.
Too bad they're so good together.
You were almost Garfunkel.
Mm-hmm. I could have been.
You could have been Garfunkel.
Our band was Electric Vehicle. And we made it just for the bumper sticker sales. We thought that was kind of our main joke.
Did you make bumper stickers?
We designed them. We never actually got to the press.
It's never too late.
Yeah. Then I don't know. Then like I said, you know, Ricky really took her away from me.
Ricky Lindholm. Well, you always have Ricky Martin. You can go back to your Latin covers.
Did you record anything?
We did actually. Well, she recorded something. We recorded a thing with Richard Swift up in Cottage Grove, Oregon. Where do you know Richard?
Or know I, do, I know who he is. Yeah.
He's now playing with the Black Keys. Actually,
and
last year was with the Shins. He's like just an amazing musician, but does all of his own stuff. But we recorded it from my first album.
That's right. Because I remember pictures from you guys being up there.
Yeah.
Some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you are from Seattle.
Seattle. Mm-hmm.
I love bumper.
You know what I was just remembering was a time when we hung out. Who was telling me? Hugh Moore was reminding me of this just in New York at Bridgetown.
Yeah,
where we went and got donuts super late at night one night. Me, you, Firm.
Mm-hmm. It was 07, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the second year of Bridgetown.
Yeah, and you actually took my guitar and like. You're like, well, I'm going back to the hotel. So then you took my guitar and put it at the front desk. I was like, man, Chris, you know, people say he's a real dirtbag, but he's such a good guy. Yeah.
They're not far off, but he also does nice things sometimes.
Every once in a while, he'll do something just so one person will be like, yeah, he's not so bad.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
Trickle-down effect.
The one guy.
Yeah.
Everyone else will be like, I don't know.
I love that festival.
Yeah, it's a good festival. I haven't played it in years because it's... I always like to go do a bunch of shows at Helium. So if I do Bridgetown, that means I can't go then perform. I can't do a bunch of shows myself for like a year.
Unless you do like a fun unannounced thing.
Yeah, but then I think it mm-hmm. doesn't really.
It do, yeah, I know.
It doesn't really help Bridgetown if they can't announce. Like, it's,
yeah,
yeah.
You know, like that more serves me. And then, you know, and now I've been, you know, I've been working a lot, so it's sort of hard for me. And it's like, oh, I'll just go up there and do an unannounced set.
Yeah, you know? But you like that town, so
I love it.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. a lot of fun, and they've really started nailing it. Like every year, it just gets better and better.
The city. Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, also the festival.
Yeah. I think a festival now that's going to be huge is that new Denver one that Adam's doing.
High Plains. High Plains. Yeah, I'm doing that on the Friday, I think.
Because Denver is now a vacation. People go there just to smoke a ton of weed.
Oh, that's right.
Legally. Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Denver is very well situated because it's you know, in the entire, like, from the Mississippi River, everything west, it's like 2 hours from Denver. Two hours and less. Yeah, you can just pop over.
Fly, yeah, and also like 280 days of sun a year, some ridiculous number of how much sunny days. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a good mm-hmm. city. I went to high school in Denver. It's a good city. It's mostly a clean city from what I remember, but you could, because most of Denver is flat, and then you're kind of sandwiched in by the mountains, but then most of it's flat, so you can see downtown sticking up from anywhere in the city.
Yeah.
And everything else is pretty flat, but then you could always see the brown cloud of pollution just like just sort of like, you know, float in
mm-hmm.
to downtown and then out in the next day. But I love Denver so much. That fucking Comedy Works is such a great.
Yeah, I'm doing that in a couple weeks actually.
I've never done the suburban one, but the Larimer Square one's fantastic.
I think that they look at people like us and they think, we'll keep them downtown. Just meaning that I think that they reserve a specific comedian to go over. They wouldn't even let me do the
city
suburban
people
one.
And suburb people.
Yeah,
we're city people.
Yeah, we're cities.
We're city people.
Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that.
But I don't know if I know that the suburban club is actually more of a theater. Like it's mm-hmm. a bigger.
It's beautiful. I went to a church service there once.
Shit!
They do a church service on Sunday and a brunch, and so we went and actually filmed it and pretended like it was my opening act because I made like a little behind the scenes of my shows in Denver because I taped my CD there. And so we made it look like the gospel choir is my opening act.
That's hilarious. That's fantastic. That's really funny.
But there's something about the downtown club. It just it has the right feel for a comedy club, which is that
low ceiling.
It feels like a space that you kind of shouldn't be in. It's it's literally underground mm-hmm. and the walls are like stone. And room is kind of narrow.
Do you know
it sort of feels like a speakeasy, which is, I think, that's one of the. I mean, like comedy should sort of like in by nature, it's kind of it's sort of subversive.
Yeah.
So when you're in a space that tells you like the space is, you know, maybe shouldn't be or is sort of mm-hmm. subversive, then I think it just sets a definitely. Nice tone as opposed to
like a fancy place.
It's being underground is a bonus.
Lobster.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's much more presentational. Then it's like, well, now why not just do a theater show?
It's
yeah.
haunted, too. It was a bank, and in the green room that's in the back there was the safe. And a girl hung herself in that room, in the safe room.
Well, it's not very safe, then.
No, not for, you know, self-inflicted stuff.
No.
But the waitress, Natasha, was opening for me this just as a favor when I was doing my CD to help kind of boost the audience a little. And the waitress told her the whole story, and Natasha like related to me. And so the next day, I was like, "All right, I'm going to make her retell me the story." And then I had this local comedian wear a white dress because she's like the girl's in a white dress, and just had him like in the corner of the room. And I had her like retell me the story. And she's walking me through, and then she opens the door to give me the finale of the girl in the white dress that hung herself, and flips the light on, and he's just standing there in the middle of the room, and she screams so loud. And then realize, oh, it's a guy in a dress. Oh, and
oh my god, that's so awesome and mean. That's a good prank.
That's a lot of planning just for one.
I've done a lot of stuff at that club. Meet Rory opened for me there, and we did because you know the you probably never stay in the condo. I don't stay there.
I stayed in the condo
in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I've done like I bought like a $10 rocking chair and had my name engraved into it and put it on the deck. Like I always try and leave a mark there somehow. And Jesselneck was the week after me and Rory, and so there were these really horribly framed pictures in the thing. And so we were like up there lying, and I was like lying in the bed watching the TV, and Rory was in the couch. And I go, you know what we should do is get a picture of us lying in this bed and frame it over the couch. So when you're in the bed, you see a picture. So we got like Coors Light, took our shirts off, got in the bed, had somebody downstairs come up. The hotel, the people were like, what? And we're like, just take a picture of us shirtless in bed together. Got that framed and put it above the couch. And then the next day I was over there and I was, you know what we should do is get a picture of us sitting on the couch under the picture of us in the bed drinking and put that over the bed. And then we just did that. And then we realized, oh, the picture of us in the bed has to be superimposed inside the picture of us. Like, it has to keep going deeper and deeper. And so after like $200 of framing,
totally worth it.
We leave, and Jeselnik, I'm like waiting. He gets there on Thursday. I'm like, I can't wait to get the call. No call. Saturday. Finally, I call him. I go, what the fuck, dude? Are you going to call me? And he goes, oh, yeah, they said there was something that you did, but they took him down because they try and keep the condo, like, you know, pretty straight laced.
Oh, man.
But now they have those up in the office. They have those pictures, of shirtless pictures of me and Rory drinking Coors Light.
You know, they could have left those. And there's their fucking
one weekend.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
That bums me out.
Yeah.
That reminds me of the time we tried to pull a prank at UCLA. One year, a bunch of comedy club guys, we're going to pull a big prank. There's a giant bear statue in the middle of campus. And it's the Bruin statue, and his mouth is open and mid-roar. We, you know, got a mannequin, bloodied it up. Attached all this, like, loose meat and bacon, like, coming out of the, like, that, like, put the arm in its mouth and then, like, hung all this bacon off it. And then, like, put the body down, you know. I think maybe got one picture of it, and it was it was like right at sunrise, like just before sunrise.
Yeah,
and then just sort of like went to get coffee and like, oh, I can't wait till everyone starts going to class. We went to golf, get coffee, come back. It's already gone.
Just already
like,
gone.
Yeah, the facilities are like, yep, yoink.
See, I remember in my high school, somebody pranked the last day of school. This girl, we get to school, and there was the flagpole had a car. The flagpole is going through the middle of a car. So like somebody had and it was like the thing, like, how did this happen? And later in the day, the girl went to the office and confessed. They were like, whoever did it, you're not in trouble. We just want to give you credit. And she like went there and she's like, me and my dad spent like 6 months cutting this car in half.
Oh, wow.
We came last night and he helped me like with it was like a real operation, but such a good prank.
Wow.
But one that they couldn't physically get. They molded it back there. So the guy had to come and like saw the car in half just to get it off the flagpole. Jesus.
Thank you for confessing. You're expelled.
Yeah.
Total. Yeah.
That's our prank, is that we said that you wouldn't be in trouble, but you're very much in trouble.
Me and my friends, once our friend Chuck, we were going to kidnap him. We all got black masks and we all like went to his place. We're going to like, you know, bag him, tie him up, put him in the trunk.
Was he aware of this?
No. Okay. He didn't know this was going to happen. And then we go to his place, like we're all like sneaking around because it's like his room was like really far away from the way the house was set up. It was really far away from the parents' room, and so it was like perfect. Like, you know, if he made a struggle, we could easily handle it. And all of our friends were horrible to each other. Our friend Raph Taylor like set up this horrible precedent of just like he would put shit on people, like human shit on like the back of steering wheels and stuff like that. So it was he was like,
that's not a prank. That's like,
that's just, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's just like, just everyone would do horrible shit to each other. It's like, I don't know why any of us were friends because we were just trying to murder each other all the time. And so we're like, this would be really funny if we try to like kidnap Chuck. And then so we're like going up to his door, like he had his own door to the outside and it was a glass door and we're all in masks and then he's awake. Like at 4 a.m, just on IRC, like chatting with people in his underwear. And then like someone steps on something, it makes a noise. He looks, he just sees some masked dudes. And then he just like flips out, like his computer gets knocked over, a huge computer knocked over the desk and then runs through a plate glass window.
So the prank got even better.
Pranked him.
Yeah. And then runs through this plate glass window and screaming to his parents, that he was like there was like mass man. We bolted and then he never mentioned it to us ever.
Then you didn't mention it to him?
We never mentioned it to him.
He's going to find out on this podcast?
No, here's a weird thing about Chuck is that he went crazy. Like he moved up to Seattle.
Well, you guys broke his brain.
Yeah, I think his parents kept on trying to convince him that he was crazy. He moved up to Seattle and he's like, I'm crazy. My parents think I'm crazy. Then he would like smoke pot and do shrooms and sit in a closet. Because he's like, that's what crazy people do. It was a really weird thing. We think like his parents made him crazy.
They influenced him.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And then he actually now he's like lives off the government and doesn't have a job and is just kind of nuts.
From Seattle, Nick pulls off the mask. Finally, we are even.
You know, that reminds me of something that I thought was a prank, but it was also based off my own insecurities. And now I'm married to her. But my wife and I had dated for 3 years, broke up for 5, and got back together. And we broke up for a little time in that first 3 years because I had created – this is, I guess, the beginning of catfishing, really. I had created this fake girl, Heidi Mellon@Hotmail.com, and emailed my wife or the girlfriend at the time just saying like, hey, I just want you to know like you're so lucky. Your boyfriend is like super good looking and I hope you know how lucky you are.
Oh my God.
And she's like, that's so weird. And then the next day I was like, hey, saw you guys at this cafe yesterday.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. I can look back and then I had it. Remember how you could set up these accounts?
Were you like trying to like save the relationship? Like,
I think that I was like trying. I don't know. I think I just had a really bad sense of humor. And so then eventually she was carrying these. She printed like maybe 4 of the emails out and was carrying them in her purse, like showing them to people like, this is insane. And then finally we went to Togo's one day, that sandwich place, you know, Togo's. And I was like, listen, I'm Heidi Mellon. And she just got up and like didn't even start her sandwich and just got in her car. She had driven me there. Just took off. And now, you know, I was just sitting in a Togo's with 2 sandwiches. She didn't call me for a week and then she forgave me, but
holy shit.
That's where you learn the boundaries. And every now and again, we'll still bring up Heidi Mellon.
You should really take him back.
I might still have access to that account. Do you know how often they?
Yeah. I remember during the early MySpace days, someone sent me a link to a MySpace profile, which was for somebody else, but all the pictures were of me. And there was a lot of interaction between this guy that looks like me, who is me, and this other girl, like flirting on the comments, mm-hmm. like or the bulletin board or whatever, you know, like you know, joking around, like can't wait, we should go snowboarding, all kinds of weird shit like that. And then I kind of was just watching it for a while. Then I started looking at that girl who's interacting with this guy that is me, and she's really cute. And she's really attractive. And so I kind of was like, oh, what the fuck? This is really weird. And so I messaged that profile. I was like, hey, man, it's me, you. This is really funny, but what the fuck is going on? And then a guy responds with, oh, okay, how did you find this? I was like, someone sent it to me. He's like, who? And I was like, I don't know. Just someone that I know. And then they're like, okay, well, our friend has this girlfriend that sucks, and we're convinced that she cheats on him all the time. So we created a profile based off the type of guys she likes, and you look like the type of guy she likes.
Oh my God.
And you do the stuff that she likes, like snowboarding and, you know, stuff like that, and likes the same bands. And we were trying to do some entrapment to like then show like convince her to get together with this guy.
Basically say all the things that she really wanted people to say to her, but instead of her boyfriend doing that, we thought we'd make a fake person to do it.
Yeah, and then so it's like, and so they were going to try and then
they
like,
were going to try to entrap her so that she would go for this guy, so they could go to their friend and go, look,
she sucks. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's nuts. He's like, we'll take it down. I was like, please do. And then I messaged the girl and I was like, hey, this is the real me. You seem to really like the way that I look. I have a completely different personality. And she's like, whoa, this is really crazy. And then, but we kept on messaging back and forth. And then I realized how creepy that made me and how weird I felt because of that. And then I just stopped responding and blocked her.
I was actually the victim of a catfish.
Really?
Yeah. My godfather, it's dark, but he was in Vietnam and he just kind of like lost his business, went crazy. And he shows up one day when I was living in California, when I moved down here, and he said, hey, you know, I took your brothers and sister on a vacation to Hawaii when you were younger and you didn't get to come. And I always feel like I've owed you this vacation. And I'm just down here visiting my dad. I'd love to take you to Catalina. I was like, great, fine. So next thing I know, we're helicoptering to Catalina. Cash influx. What I don't know, he's stolen $5,000 from under his dad's bed in Long Beach. We stop there on the way. We get to Catalina, and let's take a golf cart tour. So we're taking golf. It's hot. My shirt's off, you know. And he's like, let's get a picture of you over here by this. And he's taking all these pictures of me like all day. And then the next, it was just a night whirlwind trip. And then he stays at my house for a few days, and he kept using my friend's. He's like, "How do I upload these pictures? I want to send them to his wife, and I want to." And so he's using my buddy's computer, and he goes grocery shopping, and I'm like, "Let me see what he's really doing on his computer." And I get, and he ended up signing out of his Hotmail, and I get into his Hotmail. There's no emails. There's no sent whatever. And then I go in the deleted, and there they all are, to this Russian woman that is in Russia that he's been sending money to, and pictures of me saying that that's him.
Oh my God.
That's not at all where I thought that was going.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
did you fuck that Russian lady?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's again how I met my wife.
Olga.
It was the weirdest, scariest thing.
That's insane.
Yeah.
So how did you confront?
I just called my dad and I was like, "Hey, this is weird. I don't want to confront him." And the next day he's like, "Hey, I got to go." So my dad must have just called him and been like, "Hey, get the fuck out of my son's house. Like, what are you doing?" This is weird. Yeah.
You could have had Heidi Mellon send him an email.
I know.
Yeah.
Heidi Mellon, actually, looking back, was a pretty good name.
Mm-hmm. It's a great name.
Heidi Mellon. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, based off my obsession with boobs.
Mm-hmm. And how you like them to keep them hidden.
Yeah. Yeah. And how I think I wear great shirts, and she's always complimenting my shirts.
That's a little delayed reaction there.
No, I know.
Heidi Mellon. Okay, I missed that too.
Okay. Yeah. Heidi Mellon.
Yeah, Heidi Mellons.
I mean, come on.
Heidi Mellon.
We're all friends here. We're all comics. We like
it. Yeah, we're all just having a good time. We're
okay.
We're
just fine. No one got hurt by that dumb joke.
Yeah, it's like the Three Musketeers.
I think it only brought joy to our day,
Nick,
to be honest.
So is the album is out, the special's out now? The album's out?
Yeah, actually just came out with a vinyl on
Folk
the 24th.
Folk Hero.
Yeah. Folk Hero is on Netflix and iTunes, but then a vinyl just came out.
So what? How long was the process for putting the special together?
I think it took 5 years for my last thing. I think I really didn't do much for a year or two. You know, like that, you know, when you like finish something and then you just go out on the road and you really have no direction. At least I didn't have a direction back then. I really didn't realize the process of making an album and then immediately trying to come up with the next one. I thought, well, I did it. I should just relax a bit and tour on the same things. And you realize you can't do what bands do. Like a band puts an album out and they're just like, well, I'll tour on that for 3 years, I guess. This one album.
Yeah, because people love hearing songs again. They don't love hearing jokes.
It's really weird. Yeah. Sometimes, like, I'm sure, like, someone like Mitch Hedberg, people are like, they want to hear the classics. You know,
well, but it's just that
the classics last, you know,
a song is a song is a journey, basically, and a joke is a magic trick.
Yeah.
So people, you know, people just don't want to see the same magic tricks over and over again. They want to see new magic tricks. But the songs, you know, the songs kind of anchor them in moments of their lives. And so they're basically like a song is a diary, a musical diary.
I like to think that the band Journey, before they got their name, was singing. I'm like, what is a song? I guess the song's a journey.
The first band was like, what a trip.
Well, maybe it should be Journey.
Yeah, so I think that's, you know, I know that, that's part of it. But there are some, you know, like I'm sure if Gaffigan...
Like Brian Regan or something. Like
Brian Regan or Gaffigan, if you know, like if he busted out Hot Pockets again, people would go crazy just because it's like...
I think Regan does that too, where he does like an hour and a half, goes off, and then comes back and takes requests and like does, you know, the alphabet or whatever people want to hear.
Boy, he's so fucking amazing. Like he's just one of those guys that's a holdover from the old way that comedy worked.
Mm-hmm.
And he just has this tenure. He just has this legendary status. And never really did a lot of television, didn't really do movies, just fucking toured nonstop and was funny every fucking time. And that's how he, you know, like that's how you build up.
I listen to like Sirius a lot, and like, I'll bounce between like Laugh USA and Raw Dog and the Comedy Central station. And he's one of the one people that they will play in every single one of those.
Oh, wow.
And never gets old, you know, like, because there's some people like, all right, I've heard it, you know, or my friend, but I still have heard it. And you could listen to his bits over and over again.
Yeah. I think a lot of Brent Weinbach bits are like that for me.
Yes.
Or it's like Russian Alphabet as like one of them. And you just like, it's like I can just, it's just, it's, they're so silly and so weird that you can just hear them over.
Well, because he's also performing in a way that is this, you know, it's not like Louis, like, you want to, Louis has great bits and they change and it's fun to like watch him pop in and do 10 at the improv or something and see where he's moving with it. But after I see one of his specials, I'm like, all right, I can see the next one now.
Well, because Louis's material by his design is very disposable in the sense, and I don't mean that in an insulting way. I just mean like he wants to get through a special a year. So he just kind of like he just fucking like writes it really fast, puts it together really fast, records it, and he's already on to
and
the
it's
next
great
thing.
And it's fun to hear for sure. Yeah, but it's not like that, and it's made to just kind of hear and throw away in
yeah.
a way.
Yeah, because it's about that mm-hmm. time.
I mean, he's done like eight specials or something crazy. Is it that many or is it more? Yeah, something like that. And he's already, you know, and most comics will only ever do one or two, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, like three is like, oh, that's ambitious. Four, you know, but fucking eight or that's...
In like 8 years.
Yeah. And a TV show.
A bunch of TV shows. Yeah. And then the latest one.
Yeah.
The Dow movies. And now I'm doing I'm doing the Oddball Fest.
Yeah, yeah, I
and
saw
he's,
that.
He's on that.
Yeah.
It's weird, though, because they say, like, going to Seattle, but it's going to Auburn.
How far outside of Seattle is that?
Pretty far. Auburn's not too close. I mean, it's, you know, an hour.
Oh.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. That's like, what's that other place?
But I feel like they're doing it. It's Oddball, so, like, going, I think they're going to a weird place outside of Seattle in a way. Not like
what
Auburn's weird.
What are the venues for this?
They're fucking massive. We're, like one of the besides the other comics who were doing it, one of the reasons why I got super giddy about doing it is because one of the venues is Red Rocks.
Oh, weird.
That's crazy.
I mean, these are like 6,000 seat venues.
Are all these people doing all of them?
No.
There's
like a color code on the flyer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing like I think there's 20 dates and I think I'm doing like 15 of them. Louis doing most of them, and then other people like Gaffigan's popping in and out, Aziz is popping in and out, Marin's
and
popping in and out.
Brody has a side stage?
Brody has a side stage. Why is that funny?
I don't know, but we're all laughing.
Sure, you could go watch the main stage. Yeah. Sure, you could.
Yeah.
Or here, you know, we're keeping it real
the
here
real.
In Auburn.
Push.
Auburn.
Leave.
Capitol Hill. I've been to Queen Anne.
Don't tell me. I know. Yeah.
I know the U District.
Ballard is a place.
I've eaten at Dick's. I know Susie the fry cook.
How's the comedy scene in Seattle?
It goes in its ups and downs, I think, right now. Like it's just like any city where, I guess Chicago is not a good example of this, where they have like people move out of Chicago and then that next group just kind of fires right up and they're, you know, I think Seattle, like a lot of guys left and they're now in their rebuild, you know, and there's still super funny guys up there. It's just not, they don't have like the leader that they used to have. Like Scott Moran used to kind of really kind of lead the Republic of Comedy mm-hmm. with Emmett Montgomery and another couple of people. Emmett's super funny. He's still up there, but yeah, it's in like that rebirthing kind of, I think it's every 5 or 6 years they get a great kind of group of people.
But yeah, I think that's Portland's issue right now too. It's like all the Portland guys popped and then
Ian
moved
and
out.
Yeah.
Ian and Ron and
mm-hmm.
yeah. So it's like it's weird that it just kind of percolates and everyone
yeah.
leaves. But like that credit to all the Denver guys, you know, the Grolics, like staying in Denver.
Yeah.
You know? But like you said, it's like it's a hub, it's close to a bunch of places so they can kind of sustain.
Yeah, yeah. I mean you know, and especially the way things work now, you don't you know, I'm like especially if you're that close.
Yeah.
If there are big auditions they can fly in or ultimately they can you know, I mean if they're that closer to the middle of the United States, that just it's just a lot easier to tour
yeah,
all
yeah.
around the Midwest.
It seems like Adam Caton Holland lives in LA.
That's the guy that's like actually what you want. I think that's the thing, is you come here and you live here for a year and everyone's like, oh, he lives here, and then without telling anybody you move back to your home place. And then people just assume you're still here, because how often do you see people?
And yeah. every you know? Couple months you just pop in.
Yeah.
Drop in, you know, do it.
Yeah.
Do a set somewhere.
Yeah, definitely.
Local set somewhere.
And Ben and Andrew are starting to come a lot more too. So like they're starting to become regulars. I love the fact that they're staying there and they're really making a go at it. And there's no lack of opportunities for them. I think it's really, really cool.
I was doing that for a while on my MySpace page, and my Twitter was just changing every 6 months the city that I live in. Mm-hmm. And then people take that seriously. They're like, how long have you been living in Missoula?
Oh my God, I performed in Missoula once.
Really?
I've never done Missoula. I've done Bozeman.
Furman and I performed at, what's the school there? Is it just the University of Montana?
Yeah.
And it was really cool, actually. I think we flew into Spokane and then just drove over to Missoula, which is a fucking gorgeous drive.
Yeah.
It's
big sky country, friend.
Well, it's gorgeous because you're going through mountains, and so you stop in these little towns that were like mining towns that are just preserved. and now, you know,
I love Montana.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. And Missoula was really fun. We performed outside, like on just a big intramural field or something. Oh, wow. And it's just like the sunset and the mountains and everything.
Do you remember the commercials to buy land? Those TV commercials to buy land in Montana. You remember those?
Can you still do it?
I remember, it was like, it was just gorgeous shots. I was like, Montana.
It's like the California ads.
Yeah, but it was all about selling land.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you know, the California ads are like, come and surf and snowboard in the same day.
But yeah. Fucking go home when you're done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because we're crowded.
That's my LA.
Yeah. Yeah, but the Montana one was just like, it's like, buy land, it's cheap, it's the plentiful. Look at there's mountains and there's rivers and it's big sky country.
Just a guy axing, this is my Montana.
Yeah. And the next guy, almost look identical, and this is my Montana.
If you lived here, you'd be home by now and asking yourself, who the fuck do I know here?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why did I leave my friends? Yeah. Land is cheap, but there's a reason I pay more to live near people than civilization.
They cut to some guy like, yeah, you know, I feel like I got tricked moving out here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, my only friends are these guys in this, like, I guess you called a militia, but yeah, they're nice guys.
You know, I had a great job back in the city, but it just didn't give me enough time to experiment with pipe bombs. So now I got to come out here.
We're not saying everyone in Montana makes pipe bombs, just 20% or whatever.
It's hard to skin animals in the city. People ask questions, what do you do with a carcass? But out here in Montana, I can just throw it in the woods. Yeah.
I love my country, hate my government, Montana.
This is my land. I'm a sovereign nation, Montana.
Yeah.
Montana. Joe Montana never lived here.
Nope.
Montana.
That's on the license plate.
Joe Montana, total coincidence. Montana, no
not ironic. Not ironic, just a coincidence.
That's his autobiography title.
That would have been a great lyric in Alanis Morissette's song.
Isn't it ironic? Don't you think?
Who is this?
Well, it's the soul of Alanis Morissette.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Dooby dabble dabble.
I'm so fascinated by her relationships, like Ryan Reynolds, Dave Coulier.
Mm-hmm.
She's with someone else now that's kind of weird. Like, she must just be like an amazing lay or date or I don't know what.
She seems cute.
I knew
she is cute.
I
mean, yeah,
I was friends with Dave for a long time, and Dave said she's just like the fucking coolest girl.
Yeah.
And
what happened?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why they broke up.
He didn't get into that though.
He did not. You know, he didn't get into that part. I think it, you know.
All the time about the toast, and you're leaving your toast out.
Yeah, he didn't want her going down on him in a movie theater.
That wasn't him.
Oh,
that wasn't him.
So wait, what?
That was in the song. You ought to know. It's like will she go down on you in a theater?
No, I think the part about Dave was something about, I hate to bug you in the middle of dinner. Like, she called. It was something about, like, calling. They were broken up, and then he was having dinner with his new girlfriend, and she called in the middle of dinner, and it was probably like, we're kind of eating dinner right now. Like,
that was one of the lyrics, I hate to bother you in the middle of dinner.
Yeah. I was a slap in the face. Perfectly, I was replaced.
Were you eating some steak? And potatoes.
What rhymes with potatoes? Tomatoes?
Tomatoes, yeah. I mean, obviously tomatoes. That's, you know.
I say potatoes. Yeah. So how old is the baby now?
7 months.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a real human.
You going to keep it?
We're still on the fence. Mm-hmm. You know, and the doctor says give it a year, and if you don't want it. Mm-hmm.
A year from now? Mm-hmm. Or just like a year?
From actual when pregnancy began. So she was pregnant for 2 years before we had him.
Yeah,
They said it was abnormally long. Period. Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. not fun. Doesn't sound fun.
No. No, the pregnancy part actually was delightful for me. And I think that, too, after we had the kid, she's like, I guess I could have been pregnant for a while longer because it was relaxing, and you don't have a kid that wakes you up all the time. But, like, he woke up at 5 this morning. That was a real thing.
My dog does that.
Yeah.
Same, totally the same thing.
Totally the same thing. Got to get up.
Yeah.
Feed it. Warm the milk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My tits are sore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, you breastfeed your dog?
Mm-hmm. How do you feed a dog other than that?
And that's how most people do it.
Yeah.
I just inject the dog with proteins that it needs for the day.
Muscle milk?
Yeah. Muscle milk. You know, some enzymes.
Muscle milk. Mm-hmm. Muscle milk bone. I feed him muscle milk
muscle
bone.
Muscle milk bone. Mm-hmm. Oh, so good. So good.
Yeah, it was a journey.
My dog's ripped.
Muscle milk bone.
Dog's got a six pack.
Yeah.
Well, I think creatine is one of the main things in a dog's diet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I think any good trainer, and I might have heard this on the Dog Whisperer, is that to be a good dog owner, you have to make sure to blast the dog's lats. I think it's very important. That was funnier to me.
It really took you. Blasting lats is a good, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I would have liked it, but the anticipation is what kind of killed it for me.
Oh, my God. I don't know why that's so fucking funny to me. Just this stocky dog. It reminds me, the image of the dog that I get is the dog from the episode of The Simpsons, The Lastest Gun in the West, where he meets the old time, the old West
guy. Oh, yeah,
guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And the episode, the inciting incident in the episode is that this dog is bullying him, and it's just like, just this fucking, like, muscle dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Until he meets that guy. Ah, that's right, kid. The David O. Selznick. I think that was Dennis Weaver.
Oh, really?
If I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the dogs in Up, right? Were those the robot, like, buff dogs that were
super buff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blasting lats.
Mm-hmm. Blasting lats.
So is the baby blasting lats yet, or are you?
We're doing tricep stuff so far.
We just want to have a healthy balance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually had a bug bite that's gone down a lot, but I had a mosquito or spider bite that actually looked like I had a tricep last week, and I, from like the right angle, it just looked like I was like pumping it. Yeah.
Out, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not.
No. No.
And like, do you have an exercise regime?
Walking.
Mm-hmm.
Walking the baby. I would like, that's the thing I need to do though, because I went to the doctor and he's like, listen, your cholesterol. He said my good cholesterol is bad, which he didn't explain that. That was in a voicemail.
Your I don't good know. Cholesterol.
Listen, I have to tell you is very important to your health, but I don't have a lot of time.
Yeah, and you need vitamin D, which I heard, he said, because I grew up in the Northwest, you get a lot of vitamin D when you're young. If you like live here, and then you don't have a deficiency. But if you grow up in the Northwest where there's not a lot of sun, when you get older, you will have to take supplements.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it's a mixed bag for me when I visit Seattle. Like half the time rainy, but when it's sunny,
oh, it's the best.
God,
yeah,
it's one of the best cities.
I really, honestly, maybe this makes me a huge pussy, but I could not live in a city where the weather was oppressive for most of the year.
Mm-hmm. No, it gets tough.
I mean, like, it really does affect my mood.
It doesn't when you live there. When you grow up there, but then when you leave and you come back, then it does. You're like, oh, jeez, man.
I mean, it's just a part of your life when you're there.
Yeah,
it's raining.
My friends that like were never really outdoor types that I grew up with in Hawaii, which is, you know, outdoor year round. You know, you can always go and do something outdoorsy. They never did. They're all indoor guys. They moved to Seattle, and then since they didn't have the ability to even, if they wanted to go outdoors. Like now, when it's sunny, they immediately go on hikes. They like go, like they do sports outside. They play basketball, like anything to just be out in the sun. And it's really weird how it turned them in. Like now they're all like, they go on like crazy 3-day camping trips into the mountains and stuff like that.
That is, as Oregon especially has some of the most beautiful lake, hidden lakes and mountains, like weird.
Oregon. What was the, that year that we went to Bridgetown, we went out to that fucking waterfall. What's it called? Mm-hmm. Shit. Someone in Portland now is like, hey, it's called up. Will someone look it up? Waterfall. It's about an, I don't know, maybe 45 minutes outside of
Klamath?
Portland. No. But it's fucking, it's so amazing. Yeah. Just that kind of, I mean, there really is something about the way that we are wired.
I'll know the name.
No.
Walchella?
No. Just look up waterfalls, Portland. But there is just, there's something about when you see something majestic in nature where some weird thing just deep inside you goes, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be a part of that somehow.
Because
we're just so, you know.
That's a really good point.
No?
It's weird, though, because I grew up in a place where that was left and right. You know, you're seeing crazy awesome mountains. You're seeing waterfalls in the distance. You see, you know, the ocean.
Did you grow up on Kona?
No, on Oahu.
Uh-huh.
But like, you know, when you're growing up, you're like, meh, meh, meh. And then when I go back now, it's like I'm taken aback by that same kind of thing where I'm like, why did I, this is insane. Like, I need to be on that mountain. I need to be near this water. I need, you know, you kind of, it can get, you can numb to it. Even LA, it's like, you know, all this stuff is around us.
Oh, Angeles Crest. People Angeles have never Crest, been up to Angeles Crest.
It's like in 45 minutes away.
There's you want to dump a body, that's where there. You go. Angeles Crest. Yeah, you're going to the Angeles National Forest.
Yeah. I just saw there's a rock you can jump off up there into water.
Oh, really?
There's someone just put up a video somewhere up on that trail.
Nice. I'd be down for going.
But there's a campground that's 40 minutes out of LA that's called Chileo, which is just above Spitz Falls, which is where you go, that is beautiful. I mean, and nobody even knows about it. Every time I tell somebody, they go and they... like, rave about it.
You know, guys like Brooks Whelan and Ryan Singer. Those
I sent
guys,
him up there.
Yeah. They go up to those mountains all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's so close.
It really is close. And you don't have to go that far out of LA to feel like you're not in LA anymore.
Yeah, it's really fast. I remember, two winters ago, there was snow up in the Glendale Mountains. And so like from my place in Atwater to there, 25 minutes, snow.
Yeah, you go up a hill and there's like a cafe there. You get hot chocolate. You go up in the snow and you can like...
Oh, there really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Is that the place where they used to have chairlifts?
Oh, I don't think...
Because there's a place up in Angeles Crest or deeper down in there somewhere where you can... There's like an abandoned ski mountain that doesn't even get snow
I think
anymore.
It's further down, like Mount Baldy maybe?
Yeah. Okay, something. Yeah.
What?
Water
yeah, yes, yes.
Have you not found this?
All right, you guys talk for a sec while I look at the
Oregon waterfalls.
Do you want to talk?
Multnomah Falls.
Yeah, Multnomah.
Multnomah Falls.
Here it is.
Fucking fantastic Multnomah Falls.
You want to talk spokesperson stuff or you want to keep that out?
I love being a spokesperson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to right now.
Yeah. Yeah. My responsibilities are basically done unless they rehire me.
Did they? Yeah. See, that was a weird thing. I'm not sure if you know this, but he's now the spokesperson for the Honda Fit.
Oh.
They started last night.
What kind
night,
of car
right?
do you drive, Jonah?
I drive a Honda Fit.
And tell them you got it after you saw the commercial.
I just got this 2009 Honda Fit. but it's a weird thing because, you know, people see you and they know you and then they're able to tell you they saw the commercial, but it really it's an odd
So far I've been called a sellout once. And then the person apologized immediately after. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess it is selling out to support my son and wife and, you know, to after all working for free forever to take a job.
I think people like to throw out the term selling out without even realizing exactly what it is. But selling out isn't about getting paid to do something. Selling out is, I believe, where you would say, hey, I don't believe in this company because they test on animals. And then the company says, hey, we want to hire you to be our spokesperson. You go, okay. I think it's compromising your core beliefs for some type of gain, some type of financial gain or some sort of superficial gain. That's selling out. It's not, you know, as Henry Rollins, I heard him describe it once. He was like, conducting a business transaction is not selling out because he did those truck commercials.
Yeah, that's right.
And then, you know, but it's
well,
not.
Dave Eggers, I think, said it best if you've ever read that Harvard interview he did where the question 9 or something out of 12 questions was, do you feel like you're selling, like, because of you're selling this book as a movie, do you feel like a sellout or whatever? And he said, just see addendum and definitely read this. And everybody, it's so good, but. He does this addendum that's longer than the whole answers that he gave, and he just rips this guy apart. And he's like, so did the Flaming Lips sell out when they were in Beverly Hills 90210? Because doing that allowed them to make an album where there were 6 discs that you had to play all at the same time.
Yeah.
And does that mean that they sold out? Because they made this one piece of art that, you know, like, it's such a good kind of perspective that I used to worry about that all the time. I used to worry about, like, this indie, like, will the comedy... fans, you know.
You know, all that stuff's more in your head. Most people
it is.
Don't really care. And I think, honestly, you know, if you're just up front with people and just say, like, look, I'm doing this so that – because it allows me to do this and I'm not compromising anything I believe in order to do this in the first place, then I think most people – like, the only people that will really get cranky about that are just fucking dicks. And they were gonna be unsatisfied with something you did – somewhere down the road.
Yeah, I mean, well, when you were about to do them, you know, Nick called me and wanted to just kind of, you know if there was any kind of backlash for when, like, I did the Bing stuff. And I said the only backlash I got, like,
and we had a juice together.
We had our juice place that we never make plans to get juice there together, but it happens quite frequently. But he asked, like, what was the backlash? And I said the only backlash I got was it was because it was for a product that everyone made fun of already. Mm-hmm. And that was the only shit I got because it was Bing, and people were like, "Really, Bing? Bing sucks. What's wrong? Like, why do you like Bing?" And you know, you want to try to explain to them how jobs work, and how it's just, you know. But like, and then I told him that, you know, like the Honda Fit is like a good car, and it's just a car commercial. And it's a you know, it's not like no one's gonna go, "This is like the dumbest car around." It's not like it's the PT Cruiser.
Yeah, and they actually made them pretty well, which was nice. But my dad, I remember when I called my dad, he works in the car business. He goes, "Nick, you're working for one of the best companies out there right now."
Well, there are some people that think that any corporate anything is automatically evil.
Yeah. Well, so I felt that, okay.
And those people you're just not going to ever make happy.
Yeah. I mean, I felt that, like, Bing is like, you know, it's not as good as Google, but like, but it is a part of the Microsoft company, which is Bill Gates does a lot of good stuff for the world. Like, he does a lot of really good stuff for people with the money he's made from Microsoft. So, you know, I was able to kind of be like, "Hey, it's, you know, it's not the best product, but it's like, it's a cool company." And I don't.
Yeah, if the guy is giving billions of dollars to try to make the world better,
yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
Half exactly. My family works for that company. That's
of
right,
course,
that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool company.
Yeah, I saw him at the picnic. Yeah.
did you perform at the picnic?
Yeah. I did.
It's crazy the party they put on.
No, I didn't do it.
You didn't do any spokesman stuff?
No, they asked, but it was weird because the success of the Bing commercial, they were not prepared for, because it was supposed to be an online component to another campaign. And the other campaign, and these were directed by Jason Wolliner, who did Eagle Heart and Human Giant, stuff like that, you know, a friend of ours. And like, but those didn't work out, and so they ended up already having the ad buys on TV. So they put the commercials we made with me on TV, and they tested really well. And then they're like, "Oh, we should do another one." And so we just did another one. And there was no official, like, "You are now the spokesperson of Bing." It wasn't supposed to be like that. So each one was piecemeal. And then, like, when they finally got around to being like, "Oh, we want you to be a spokesperson," but the only benefit was, like, these really, like, they want to give me a lot of money to go to openings of Microsoft stores and to, like, they wanted me to tweet about it.
Those stores are ridiculous, by the
way. Yeah,
they're
really weird. They make people dance and shit like that.
Yeah.
But they're like, you know, they wanted me to tweet about it. They wanted me to be, like, in print ads and stuff like that. But it was just because everything was so piecemeal and it wasn't, like, a lot of money, I had to say no. Because it was just like, they'll pay you for the shoot day. As opposed to, like, the whole overall campaign.
you weren't getting the deal that someone would normally get for being a spokesperson, which is like, which actually is a big deal, because if you are associated with a product, it cuts off a lot of other opportunities
flow
for you.
Stephanie Courtney is an amazing, hilarious actress, but she really can only do Flo from the Progressive commercial,
right? And she really was. I mean, I remember we used to do open. I mean, like, Stephanie used to do the Gypsy Cafe and the Brew Co. And I did the first year I did Aspen. I think she was there that year too, doing
the
Aspen Comedy Festival. And she's such an original comedy voice and such a great performer and made such great choices. She was sort of. I always loved watching her and Bamford, because they were two performers who would always kind of express jokes through just, like, weird characters.
Mm-hmm.
And really original choices, and you know, so it's, I mean, it's great for her that she's making
a bunch of money.
What
kind of money she makes out of that. I mean,
someone was telling me that about, like, they bought it. She has, like, a huge house in the hills, like, you know, multi-million.
That's, well, I don't need to quote the comedian, but a comedian that we all like and think is funny was like, "Hey, you could try and appease, like, that small percentage of people that will be mad at you, or you could buy a fucking house."
Well, that small percentage of people, if they really care about you, they're not going to judge you for trying to make your life or your career better. And this kind of idea in our heads when we're starting out of, like, oh, there's this cadre of comedy consumers and they all talk and they all think as one. And it's like, no, there isn't. And no, they don't. And no one gives a fuck.
Yeah.
And you, it's all in your head because...
Well, there was that whole story about when David Cross did the Chipmunks movie.
Yeah.
And, like,
he said, it was for kids. It wasn't for you.
Yeah, it wasn't for you. It was for kids. And then he's like, and I went up and I looked at a cabin, like a nice house in upstate New York, and it was a certain amount of money. And then I told the person selling it, "What about, do you take indie credibility bucks?" And they said they didn't, which is crazy. I know. And I told them, "Are you sure? I'm on Sub Pop Records." And they're like, "Yeah, sorry.
That's so funny. We need actual money."
And then he's like, "And then a job came up to where if I took this job, I can get that dream house of mine."
Now, I don't know. I think it's actually more punk rock to just make choices. Like, T.J. Miller is a perfect example of like, yeah, I fucking did the Yogi Bear movie. Yeah, now I'm doing Silicon Valley. Now I might do something weird. Like, it's
always doing something weird.
It's more about like, you know, are you just making choices for,
on and off camera?
Yeah. Are you making choices for you? What are you making choices for? Like,
yeah,
that. You know, it like
when he's in Transformers,
exactly.
And then he did like a huge Sprint campaign or Verizon or something.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he did the cell phone campaign too.
I just think if you leave yourself open to work, you will work, and you'll get different types of jobs, and some of them will be the Silicon Valley. And
yeah, well, you know, Paul Scheer, like they just offered him like another couple seasons of NTSF, but he's not going to do them because he's like, I want to try and do some other stuff. Like he's not letting like this like easy money stuff. Like stop him from like doing whatever he wants to do.
Yeah,
and like that kind of stuff is cool. And that's like, you know, with TJ's, like he's taking these big jobs because it allows him to just do whatever he wants to do. And that's like I think that's pretty amazing.
Well, it also it's part of just the kind of interesting story of him.
Yeah,
it's like he really does. It's sort of, you know, like, oh, Will Ferrell's that way. I'm like, oh, you know, he does like does a movie in Spanish. He does internet video. He does Milwaukee's best. It's like, oh, that seems those are the careers that I really admire. People, you just go, they're just doing what they want to do for them. They're not doing it for, and like, that's where you go, he's not doing that for anyone else. And if you don't like it, that is your fucking problem. Yeah. That's not his problem because he's doing what he wants to do.
You guys didn't sign a contract. He has not, he doesn't owe you anything.
So ridiculous.
So where's your where's the album available?
It's on iTunes, and you know, you can steal it anywhere, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But the vinyl, I look at it like this. It's like $20 to buy the vinyl, and it's $10 more than buying it on iTunes, but you get like a real solid kind of piece of artwork that I put a shitload of work into.
And I'm sure you get the download code.
You do get a free download code.
So
that
basically, you're paying $10 for like a really cool keepsake. That's what I like about the idea of having it on vinyl, is that you still get it digitally. Because that was what people's concern for a while. It's like, well, then I can't listen to it. It's like, hey, you get a really cool thing you support, and then you still get to listen to it on your
device. And it's like
device.
It's a clear vinyl. I don't know. There's a lot of cool like artwork involved in it too, which I meticulously go over when I make a special. Like, I care so much about. I had my design guy build a fake Netflix page and put every single idea that we had. Like, because it's weird if you look through Netflix and like, I love Bill Burr. But you will see the artwork and you can't even read that it's Bill Burr. Like, his name isn't even legible, or the title of the album, or, you know, like all these other people. And you think, man, you got to really, Netflix is all about people seeing it and they're catching their eye. And do they know your name, your face, and the title of the thing?
It's like the last Mike Birbiglia special, My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. Like, it's like, it's a really cool picture.
Oh, yeah,
it's a really
cool
design.
Out.
And like, it's like, you just kind of, you see it and you kind of go, oh, cool. And yours is like, has the, you know, like the huge letter. It's just like very shocking. Like
pops.
You
know, yeah. Yeah. And now with all the, I mean, there's so much comedy on Netflix now. It's just like everybody.
Yeah. I watched Maria's. Did you watch Maria's last one?
No.
Special.
In her parents' place?
Yeah. It's at her place.
That one's on Vimeo, right?
No, it's on Netflix now.
Oh.
It's that company that's been doing a lot of the you know, digital specials, like, but it's her in her
New
house.
New Wave,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's in her house in Eagle Rock. Jackie Cation introduces her. Her parents are sitting on the couch, and Wayne Fetterman is the playing keyboard. And it's really interesting because it's like, you know, it's shot in her house, it's real small, but when she's doing most of the bits, she's looking directly into camera. So it's this really weird personal, it's not, it's like, you know, the idea is that it's for her parents that are there, but when you're watching it and there's that angle, she's doing it for you in your home.
Wow.
And it's really, really cool. It's really, really
neat. Think about how fun and easy that was to make, rather than like, oh, I've got two shows to nail it in front of these live audiences.
Got to design the set.
Oh
yeah.
That's, I mean,
it's
so
all
stressful.
It is. They're fun problems to have, but they're stressful. I remember when I was having to do the set, where I'm like, I don't know. I just picked a theme because I figured that would make it easier. I'll just pick a theme, and then that way that will inform
the lighting
everything.
And the
that will inform everything. You know, I'll sort of make it this weird Kubrick robot thing.
But what was cool about that is, like, you know, so they worked on the, like, the background, you know, the stage part of yours, but then, like, they influenced with just lighting the rest of the theater. Like, they made it seem concurrent without having to put anything else up there. So that, I thought that was really cool.
That's why I wore a shiny silver suit, because it was supposed to be, like, it was supposed to be vaguely robotic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but as opposed to what I think the way it came off, which is like, oh, like a shark skin suit. I'm like, no, no, it's supposed to be. No, people don't always get what you're going for.
No, it's funny.
I will not wear a shiny suit in the next special, though. Definitely not.
Maron was doing an interview, or he was interviewing somebody, and then weirdly enough, started talking about himself, and he and he started talking about clothing and design decisions that he's made on his specials, and I thought it was so interesting as somebody that's been around and has made a good amount of things. Like, yeah, I had good glasses on that one, but my shirt was no good. Like, or you know, the background was like all these sheep walking away, like I was like the one sheep facing the wrong direction, but no one ever got that, and it looked fucking weird.
I wonder if Eddie Murphy watches like Raw and just goes,
I like, it's like when I picked my outfit for my half hour special, I was like, oh cool, this is just kind of, it's not flashy, it makes me feel comfortable, like I feel okay in it, I like these pants, I like the way they fit, and then for some reason on camera, like, none of it looked the way it looked in real life. Like, I was at a show in Boston, and someone's saying, like, hey, I gotta, as a comic, and they're like, hey, I gotta ask you, why did you wear shiny jeans on your special? I was like, I didn't. And I just happened to be wearing the same jeans. I was like, do these look like they would fucking shine? And they're like, no. I was like, yes, I know. That's why.
I'm just a fan, man. I don't know.
Yeah. No, because it sucks. Because when I saw it, I was like, what the fuck? You know, I had no idea what it looked like.
You never
like
know
on
what
camera.
It's
going
to look like.
Well, we are coming to the end of the podcast, Nick.
All right.
But
it was a lot of fun.
Congratulations on the baby. Thanks. Congratulations on the special. Mm-hmm. And then I guess, I don't know, where are you performing around town at all?
Well, I've got Denver July 10th through 12th. Okay. And then I'm doing Chicago the 2nd through the 4th at Up Comedy.
Mm-hmm. Of August or July?
Of October.
Of October, okay.
Yeah, and then I'm also doing the what's the big... Tenacious D thing.
Oh, that's the Festival Supreme.
At the end of October.
I wanted to do that. They asked me to do it, and I couldn't do it because I won't be in town. I'm doing the other tour.
Oh, man.
So, oh, yeah. Oh, but, Oddball and Festival Supreme kind of go head-to-head, huh? With the talent. I love how they made the poster, and the smallest, most bottom thing is Tenacious D. It doesn't say anywhere, and then the smallest font on the bottom.
Yeah, there's going to be a state reunion at that thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be crazy.
It's going to be awesome.
The Oddball is going to be really great, too.
Yeah, fine. I get it. Yeah, fine.
Yeah, okay. And I'm also doing a Northwest tour. I've got a Seattle date on August 7th and a Portland date the 4th, and I'm trying to get a Bellingham and a Vancouver, like do a
Bellingham.
Whole run.
Nice. Like Bellingham.
Yeah.
It's good. And people can whore your special on iTunes.
Yep. And nickthune.com for tours.
Furman and I, we did a tour with Reggie Watts in like 2004 that no one attended.
With Howard Kramer too, right?
Howard did, maybe.
I thought that he was on it. Troubadour, you guys did.
We did basically, yeah, but we basically did, we just sort of went down the coast. So we did the Triple Door in Seattle, and then we did a venue in Bellingham. I'm sure we did something in Portland. We did something in San Francisco in a small little rock club. And then we did LA and the Troubadour, I guess. But fucking no one showed. I mean, I was like, we were in the Troubadour, which is a good sized venue, and there were probably like 30 people there.
Oh, man.
Seats are too comfortable in that venue.
Yeah, yeah. One of whom was like the guitarist, one of the original guitarists for the band Heart. And so when we did El Corazon, and then we do that part where it's like we're saying in Spanish, you know, like in 1987, the band Heart had a hit with this, you know.
That guy's kid went to the Boys and Girls Club that I worked at.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was just really funny that he was like, what are the odds that he would be there, and all of a sudden we would break out into a Heart thing, and then he was like, I was originally a guitarist in that.
Oh, that's funny.
In that band before those girls came in and then just took it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that's exactly what happened, but it feels like there was a band and then they came in, and then it just became like Ann and Nancy's band, but they're fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, good to see you, Nick Thune.
Good to see you too.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Thank you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.